In case you are only listening, if you're using audio only, I'm showing a slide right now and I'm going to describe it. If you can't see the PowerPoint slide, you'll be at a disadvantage, but I think this will still work. I'm going to ask a question, and I don't want you to overthink this. It'll be a simple and easy answer. I'm showing a slide that is solid white except for a tiny red dot in the center. If you're looking at the slide, or if you're just visualizing it in your mind, what do you see? Most, if not all, people would say they see a red dot. And of course, that's the understandable answer. But there's about 98 times more white space than there is red on the screen. The correct answer would be, I see a slide that is almost completely white, except for a small red dot in the center. There's nothing negative, nitpicky, or fault-finding about having said that you see a red dot. But this is how we often look at and judge ourselves and others. Someone may be 98% good in their behavior, but we often focus on the 2% negative to criticize. And when we consider ourselves, we may make good choices in life. We may make sacrifices for good, yet we mercilessly berate and condemn ourselves for our occasional mistakes. That has its place. We should try to be better people. We should be concerned about trying to rid ourselves of attitudes and behaviors that are detrimental and destructive. And you get better by trying to fix your flaws. No one improves by focusing only on their qualities. But when we generally look harshly and mercilessly at ourselves and others because of mistakes or failures, and when criticism and condemnation is the dominant attitude with little or no hint of love, grace, or mercy, we create an atmosphere where failure is encouraged and hope does not exist. How we handle failure will be a huge factor in how well we do in life. Some people say failure is not an option. They make mugs and t-shirts which display that slogan. But we all fail. The question is whether we get back up and try again. The question is whether or not we accept mercy and forgiveness when we fail. A better way to say it is failure is not an option, it's inevitable. Learn from it. Failure is the key to success. Each mistake teaches us something. Judas Iscariot and the Apostle Peter are two individuals who are well known for having failed in a big way. They handled their failures differently, and the end result was drastically different. We're going to take a moment to consider how Judas handled failure. There's a lot of uncertainty regarding Judas Iscariot, a lot of things that are not spelled out for us. One of the common questions about Judas is, what prompted Judas to betray Jesus? The common view that was held by Jews was that the Messiah was going to be a military leader who would lead a revolt and overthrow the Romans. That was never God's intention. In John 18, verse 36, Jesus told Pilate, "If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight." It's thought that Judas was looking for Jesus to set up a kingdom, and Judas became dismayed as he saw the tide continuing to turn against Jesus. And from Judas' perspective, he saw Jesus continually refusing to make the right moves to bring about his kingdom. And so some think Judas was of this militaristic mindset. And since Jesus was not portraying the kind of kingdom Judas wanted, maybe Judas thought his betrayal of Jesus would force Jesus' hand, that a group of soldiers sent to arrest him would cause Jesus to take up the sword and usher in his kingdom. But whether that was the case or not, another question is, what was the catalyst? What was the final straw that prompted Judas to betray Jesus? What was the thing that drove Judas over the edge? What caused him to make his move when he did? There was something that happened just a few days earlier which could have prompted him to make his move. Only days before the crucifixion, Jesus was at the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus in Bethany. Mary came and anointed Jesus and, he wasn't at that home. A little slip there. We'll see in just a second whose home he was in. But he was with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Mary came and anointed Jesus, and Judas got upset over it. Based on how Matthew and Mark's accounts read, it appears that Judas was hurt. He was offended. He was even angered by how Jesus responded to him when Judas complained that Mary had wasted the costly perfume she poured on Jesus' feet. This account is found in Matthew 26, John chapter 12, and Mark chapter 14. The woman is identified as Mary in John's account in chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, but we're going to read from the Gospel of Mark, Mark chapter 14, verses 1 through 10. The text says, "Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, 'Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor.' And they rebuked her harshly. 'Leave her alone,' said Jesus. 'Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will have always with you, and you can help them any time you want. But you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her.' Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them." There's more information given in John's account, and we'll note some of that in a moment. But in verse 3, Mark tells us that this event took place in the house of Simon the leper. Some think Simon was Judas' father. John 6:71 says that Jesus spoke of Judas Iscariot, sometime previous to these events, says the son of Simon, identifies him as the son of Simon, for it was he who would betray Jesus, being one of the 12. John chapter 12, verse 4, similar statement. One of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray him. If the owner of the house they were in was Judas' father, Simon, this event where Mary poured the expensive perfume on Jesus' feet would have been in Judas' father's home, with Judas' family and possibly some of his friends present. We see that Mary anoints Jesus in John chapter 12, verse 3. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard and expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. We see in chapter 12, verses 4 through 6, John 12, 4 through 6, that Judas objects to this. It says, "But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. 'Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages.' He didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it." And so, following the events, Mary anointed Jesus' feet, Judas complains, then Jesus rebukes Judas. In Mark's account, chapter 14, verses 7 through 9, Jesus said, "Leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." This would have been crushing if it had been in Judas' family home. Even if it was not in Judas' family home, it still would have been crushing. Then Mark chapter 14, verse 10 records Judas' response to this. It says, "Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them." So this account seems to indicate that Judas made his decision right after being rebuked and humiliated on this occasion. Judas was selfish. He was inconsiderate. This led him to indulge himself at the expense of others. Money that was intended for other people's needs went for his own pleasure. John 12, verse 6, we read a moment ago, says he didn't care about the poor because he was a thief. As a keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. But Jesus cared about Judas. Regardless of Judas' behavior, John 13, verse 2 said, after supper being ended, the devil having already put it into the heart of Judas to betray him, we see what Judas' behavior was like. But Jesus still tried to reach out to Judas during the Last Supper, just moments after that verse is recorded. Jesus washed Judas' feet like he did all the others. Jesus lamented that one at the table would lift up his heel against him. This is an expression which means that someone's going to do you harm. For example, verse 21 says that Judas hardened himself and asked, Lord, is it I? That is, am I the one who's going to betray you? In verse 26, Jesus answered, it is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish. And having dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. In Bible times, there would have been a common dish at the meal. Their bread was flat, thin, and round. And when the host dipped his piece of bread into the dish and then gave it to someone, this was very significant. To all those present and to the person receiving the piece of bread, the host was showing the love and honor that he had for that particular person. And Judas gave this piece of bread, which was considered to be an honor during the Passover feast, he gave that piece of bread to Judas. But Judas hardened himself against the gesture, and he went out into the night to sell the life of the Son of God. Later that night, after Jesus was arrested in Matthew 27, verses 3 through 10, Judas is portrayed as feeling remorse for what he had done. He tried to give back the money that he'd been paid for an innocent man's life. In his effort to assuage his guilt, he tried to throw his own responsibility off onto the priests. Matthew chapter 27, verses 3 and 4 says, when Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. He said, I have sinned, for I have betrayed innocent blood. They replied, what is that to us? That's your responsibility. So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. In his pain, Judas went to the power brokers to set himself straight instead of going to Jesus. But the guilt did not go away. And so in despair, he went out and hanged himself. This is how Judas handled his failure. Now let's take a moment to consider how Peter handled failure. Jesus had rebuked Judas, and he also rebuked Peter. Jesus rebuked Peter on the night of his betrayal. Luke's account, chapter 22, verses 31 through 34. While they were in the upper room, the previous account that we noted from John chapter 13, Jesus said, Simon, Simon, Satan, that would be Peter, the apostle Peter, also called Simon. He said, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you've turned back, strengthen your brothers. But Peter replied, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me. John's account clarifies that Judas had already left the group. So this was done in front of all the apostles minus Judas. This would have been humiliating to Peter. But this was not the first time Jesus had rebuked Peter plainly and openly. Matthew chapter 16, verses 16 through 23, Peter had just confessed Jesus as the Christ. But when Jesus began telling about his upcoming crucifixion, verses 22 and 23 tell us that Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Peter said, Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. And that was not the last time Peter was rebuked. Paul rebuked him in Galatians chapter 2. He says, When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Peter made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. Peter sometimes fell. Everybody sometimes falls. It's not falling down that ruins a person. It's the refusal to acknowledge that you fail or the refusal to get back up. The difference between average people and achieving people is their perception of and their response to failure. In the same night that Judas went and fastened a noose around his neck and in despair threw himself to his death, Peter also denied his Lord. Jesus had told Peter that he would deny him three times, just as Jesus had warned Judas. This gave both men a chance to change. Mark's account is particularly graphic regarding Peter's reaction after he denied Christ. The text says, when Peter remembered the words Jesus had spoken, he broke down and wept. Peter denied his Lord, not just once, not just twice, but three times. Yet Peter went on to become the great apostle of grace. He was the one who preached to the multitudes on the day of Pentecost. He was the one sent to the first Gentile converts. He was the one who testified in the Jerusalem conference. He was the writer of two letters of encouragement in times of darkness and fiery trials. So what was the difference in these two men? What was the difference between Peter and Judas? Peter and Judas both suffered tremendous blows to their pride. That can destroy the strongest of men. The difference between Judas and Peter was basic. Peter loved God and Jesus personally. So when Peter sinned, he realized who his sin was against, and he eventually turned back to the Lord. When Judas sinned, he went back to the Pharisees to try to fix the problem, and they rejected him. He didn't feel that he had anywhere else to go. Judas went to a quiet place and hanged himself. Peter went to his quiet place and cried out in anguish to God. Jesus can't use emotional cripples. He can't use people who will not put their trust in him, people who allow themselves to be destroyed by sin. Jesus later told Peter, if you love me, basically, rise above your hurt. Accept the forgiveness I'm offering and serve me. It's a reference to John chapter 21, not a specific quote. Judas tried to put the spilled milk back into the glass. Actions, behaviors, attitudes can't be undone. They can be forgiven, but they cannot be undone. Judas' error lay in the fact that he tried to undo what he'd done. We can be forgiven, but we can't undo sins we've committed. Because he had not developed a relationship with the Lord, Judas had not learned to seek forgiveness. The self-righteous often don't think they need forgiveness, but Judas could not accept the things. He simply couldn't accept them and move on. He held on to them. May we see how great our sin is and what we owe the Lord for our forgiveness. But may we be thankful to the Lord for blotting out our sins and remembering them no more. If we have faith in God, we need to take him at his word. He is a gracious, loving, merciful, forgiving God. He desires that you humbly seek forgiveness for your failures. In the 32nd Psalm, verses 1 through 5, the psalmist writes, blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and in whose spirit is no deceit. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long, for day and night your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you, and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. It's not the one who hides his sins whom God will bless. It's the one who confesses his sins, trusts in God's grace and forgiveness, and forsakes his sin that God will bless. May we endeavor to be that kind of person. May we handle failure in a way that makes us better, stronger, and that brings us closer to the Lord.